Hello and welcome to the New Zealand Initiatives podcast. I'm Oliver Hartwig, and today we are joined by our latest recruit, Nick Clark. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Oliver.
You've joined us as a senior fellow economics and advocacy. Well, first of all, congratulations. And secondly, can you explain what that means for you? Why have you joined? What would you like to do at the initiative?
Right, great question to start off, Oliver. So I've come to the initiative after 19 years at Federated Farmers, so managing their national policy team, working on economic policy issues, local government issues and the like. And before that, a spell in central government working for the Ministry of Transport, and then Business New Zealand, Federated Farmers, and now the New Zealand Initiative. And one thing that attracted me to the initiative was, over many years of following it, being incredibly impressed by the thought leadership, the insights that come out of the initiative, and the very capable and skilled and knowledgeable people that work here. So I feel very honoured to be joining the team.
And we've been impressed by you over the years, what you work for Federated Farmers, but also for the Local Government Business Forum. And I think that's where we first met, probably around 12 years ago.
Yes, that's right. And and since then we've had some great people from the initiative on the forum, such as Luke Malpas, Jason Krupp, and more recently Eric Crampton, who've been really great contributors to the work of the Business Forum.
Yeah, and we got to know you over the years as someone who really understands everything about local government in New Zealand, who really understands resource management, planning. There are not that many people actually in New Zealand who do, and you're also an economist, which makes it special. So we got you to the initiative just about a week ago, and you're not mucking around. You just released your first paper. So barely got your feet under the desk and you're already publishing, which is fantastic. Tell us about the first paper. So the first paper is about resource management, which we just mentioned, and it's about an idea which superficially sounds very positive. The government wants to make everything faster.
Yeah, that's right. So this is the Fast Track Approvals Bill that was introduced into the House on the 7th of March, so about a week ago. And this was introduced by Chris Bishop, who's the Minister for Resource Management Act Reform. And the idea behind that is to speed up and reduce the costs of major infrastructure and other development projects that have a national and regional significance.
So far, so good. What's the problem?
Well, I mean, there's certainly a problem with the way infrastructure is consented and approved at the moment. It takes far too long and it costs far too much. So $1.3 billion was a cost estimate made by a report to the Infrastructure Commission that just for infrastructure projects alone, so not including the various other development projects, and also a big increase in the amount of time taken to consent these projects, and some pretty amazing numbers out of that report to the Infrastructure Commission. Clearly there's a problem, and we certainly support the bill, but there are some potential fishhooks with aspects of it that we think could be improved.
Okay, then maybe we'll start with the things where we agree. So first of all, we agree that planning takes too long in this country. I mean, whether you like a specific project or not, it shouldn't take 4, 5, or sometimes 10 years to really come to a decision on that project. We think these decisions should generally be made more quickly.
Absolutely. So the costs can really mount up. A lot of the costs that infrastructure and development projects have to do is not just the costs of the consent, but also the costs of having to negotiate through the process. For example, getting expert opinion and advice, the internal costs that they have to encounter amongst having their staff involved in these issues. Just very long periods of time, very high cost process. You know, the consenting authorities, usually councils, are very risk averse, and they make them jump through lots of hoops. So definitely a problem. And some of these projects are long overdue and would certainly have great regional and national economic benefits if they could proceed.
So these projects take a lot of time. They cost a lot, probably in legal fees. They cost a lot in opportunity costs because you could have done all sorts of other things during that time. So, okay, we get it. It is a good thing to speed this up. So what is wrong then, or potentially wrong, with a fast track bill?
Yeah, so there are a few sort of potential hiccups, I guess, or downsides or risks or whatever you want to call them. So, for example, it's probably not ideal in an ideal world for ministers to be making decisions on these sorts of projects, all sorts of reasons. It can, you know, they're not necessarily, unless there's particular strength and safeguards in the bill, that they'll be picking the right projects, perhaps, in terms of prioritising the ones to go through. There's always the potential, though New Zealand is a very clean country, and deservedly so, there's always the potential when you've got ministers making decisions that they could be subjected to lobbying activity, etc. That's certainly an issue. Interestingly enough, the officials' advice that went into the bill actually preferred that an expert panel were the ones that would make the final decision. So the ministers, sure, would refer the projects, but the panel would make the decision. And that was the officials' preferred position.
Mm-hmm. We should probably clarify that this is not a criticism really of Chris Bishop as the minister driving it. He's probably driving it for all the right reasons. He wants to see infrastructure projects sped up, and he probably does this with all the right intentions. But the problem is actually more in principle then, because it might actually at some stage be a minister who is influenced by other motivations. And you think that in principle there should be safeguards against that.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, sometimes you just got to keep your eye on the horizon as to what might be coming up or what might jump out of us. So the idea, it's more of a, in principle, in a perfect world, you wouldn't have to do this.
Mm. So in a perfect world, Minister Bishop would just go ahead with his resource management reforms, and then every project would be fast, every project would be dealt with in an efficient way, and it wouldn't need a specific fast track because everything would be fast.
Correct. And actually, that's really important, is that, you know, this particular fast track approvals bill is phase two of a three-phase process with RMA reform. The first phase being to repeal the previous government's Natural and Built Environment Act. So that was gone. That was gone before Christmas. And phase two, if you like, was the fast track approvals plus work that's ongoing with freshwater management. Phase three is where the rubber hits the road. That's the replacement of the Resource Management Act, the act that was effectively brought back in after the NBEA was repealed. So the previous RMA, which nobody liked.
Sure, neither did we.
No. And it was pretty much unloved by everyone, no matter on what side of the debates on the environment or the economy were. So the replacement of the act, the current act, is key. And the government has said that it'll be based on the enjoyment of private property rights, which is an interesting focus, a focus that we would certainly support, but a lot will depend on what that means. But the idea would be, as you say, is that all projects, large and small, day-to-day activities can be consented and undertaken without having to go through the hoops that they have to now.
So the fast track bill is really just a stopgap measure. So Chris Bishop probably realises that until we have the successor to the current Resource Management Act, it will take years. I mean, the previous government took two terms to come up with their replacement. Any new replacement will probably take also at least a couple of terms, maybe longer. Mm. And in the interim, we'll now have at least something that helps the minister to basically speed up decision-making for some infrastructure projects that he would like to see before we even get to the bill.
Yeah, absolutely. So and the position that we would take on this is that, fast track approval bill, go for it, but maybe have a sunset clause in there. That
sunset clause, you probably have to explain.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Sunset clause is basically making a bill or an act temporary.
So an expiry date.
Expiry date, if you like. And you could do that potentially, give it some time, and then hopefully after a certain period of time we'll have a new RMA and the need for fast tracking would fall away.
So 2034.
You never know.
Okay, so you want to have an expiry clause or a sunset clause.
Yeah.
You would like to see more involvement from other ministers too.
Yeah, so at the moment, the decision-making ministers set out in the bill are the ministers of infrastructure, transport and regional development. But it's a little bit, and for any approvals that relate to conservation land, the conservation minister gets involved as well. But it's a little bit curious, I guess, that the Minister for the Environment, who is responsible for the Resource Management Act generally, is not a decision-making minister. And that is one of the criticisms from environmental groups and the opposition around environmental impacts that I think is valid, and I think it could be helped by having the Minister for the Environment in the loop.
Do you think it would make a practical difference? Because, I mean, if we look at the current cabinet setup, we have Chris Bishop as the number three or four in cabinet, whereas the current environment minister is not even in cabinet, which is a bit odd anyway, since it's actually quite an important portfolio. But you would kind of think, with such a senior minister as Bishop, also in charge of IMA reform, he would always have the final word on this. So whether we have the environment minister or not, in the current circumstances, probably wouldn't change much.
Maybe. I mean, certainly looking at the pecking order, if you like, then you're absolutely right. The environment minister is outside cabinet. But I think it's important to at least be able to get those perspectives in front of the ministers, whether it's Chris Bishop or Simeon Brown or Shane Jones, to make sure that the environment minister's perspective around, you know, protecting the environment from adverse effects is at least put in front of them.
Okay. The other thing you would like to see, and that's probably not a reflection on the current ministers and office holders, you want to see some safeguards against corruption.
Yes, that's right. So you could do that by, say, having the expert panel making the decisions. I think a lot of that will depend on, you know, in terms of its desirability against the objectives of the bill, which is around mainly around economic and development type factors. A lot will depend on who's on the panel and what skill set they bring, you know, frankly, with the ideology they've got. And they would be exposed to lobbying potentially as well. So if you were to keep the ministers as decision makers, there are certainly ways we think, or I think, that we could mitigate some of those risks. For example, you could have a disclosure requirement that if a minister disagrees with a recommendation from the panel, they would have to disclose that and why, and give good reason as to why they're not agreeing. Secondly, you could have a disclosure of meetings that the ministers are having with the applicants, the people that are actually putting forward these proposals. So a bit like a transparency exercise, you know, sunlight is the best disinfectant, as they say. And thirdly, you could have disclosure of political party donations by applicants. So you'll be able to see where the money's flowing.
Because there is an obvious risk where a process, where an application could potentially cost you millions and maybe tens of millions of dollars in legal fees and consultants. Just a quick call to the minister's party, you've just recently donated a few hundred thousand dollars, would speed this up considerably.
Yeah, there would be a risk of that. You know, you'd hope that in New Zealand, which is a relatively, you know, got a good reputation, that might be a little bit less, but I think we'd be naive to think that that wouldn't happen. I think
it would be a temptation.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, you would have to be quite a saint not to be tempted.
Indeed.
Yeah. Okay, so where are we now with this bill? So it's just been introduced. So this bill, I presume, will now go through the normal procedures with three readings and, of course, a committee stage in between. So when does the government actually expect this to pass?
Okay, so the bill's going to go through its normal select committee process, which I think is a good decision, particularly seeing as there wasn't much opportunity for much consultation in the lead up to the bill being introduced. And that was certainly a concern of a number of people that have spoken out about the bill, is that there was a lack of consultation, but simply because of the constrained time period. So the bill's been referred to the Environment Select Committee, which is probably the right select committee for it to go to, given it's amending a bunch of, you know, effectively setting up a regime that's going to impact on the RMA and various other conservation-related legislation. Submissions have been called, and the submissions are due on the 19th of April, which gives about 6 weeks, which is, again, pretty standard. Again, that's a good thing. And the bill is required to be reported back to the House by the 7th of September. So that's a six-month consideration process for the bill by the Select Committee. It'll then be reported back to the House, and then it'll go through its usual processes on the floor of the House.
And given that you've just published a paper on that, I would expect you to make a submission as well.
Yep, sure.
Well, you started it.
Sounds good.
Okay. But beyond that, what are you planning to work on with the initiative?
Oh, beyond this, there's a couple of other things I wouldn't mind
about
the fast-track bill. So I guess there's other things that we want to put in. So we talked about the safeguards for, you know, with regard to ministers' decision making, but we've also suggested in my note that we have economic efficiency as a criteria for projects being considered and referred, and we've also suggested that the expert panels, there's a bit of a gap. It's not required that the panel has economic analysis expertise, and I think that's really important given the fact that these projects have been referred on the grounds of economic benefit. We've also suggested that there'd be The Public Works Act compensation provisions should be reviewed and increased. So at the moment, the Public Works Act has, you know, compensation provisions, but they're more around market value. But there's plenty of discussion out there that perhaps those compensation arrangements should be made more generous to landowners. It would certainly expedite agreement and therefore potentially reduce the amount of time and taken to negotiate property acquisitions, but do so in a way that is respectful of property rights.
So even though this is a fast-track bill, there are plenty of devils and plenty of details.
There are indeed.
Yep. Okay. Beyond this particular bill, what are you looking forward to? What do you want to work on?
Oh, look, I've always been a bit of an all-rounder. Certainly in my previous jobs, I was working on a whole bunch of issues. So one thing I know that you're keen on me working on, Oliver, is localism. And
always.
And putting the case for that around localism, around city deals. So both of these things have been talked about a lot, including by the National Party prior to the election. And I know, you know, you took Christopher Luxon on a trip to Switzerland.
Yes.
And he's been talking localism. I think we need to make sure that that talk gets translated into action and that it percolates down to the other ministers and MPs as well. So localism, city deals is kind of a bit of an idea that is sort of about trying to get better local government outcomes, working with central government. A lot of uncertainty as to what city deals will actually mean. There's a lot of people out there giving their own perspectives of what they mean. And I think from our perspective, we would like to see sort of a competitive localism approach, which kind of means that it's not just about finding ways to extract more money out of central government. It's about actually trying to find ways that local government can be used as like a little laboratory, if you like.
Yes.
You can experiment with policies mm-hmm. that might work for a particular area. I mean, they could be different regulatory approaches. You know, there could be some funding in there. It's certainly really important that we get better financial and funding incentives that make local government a bit more responsive to growth and development, and certainly encouraging that Minister Bishop was talking about, you know, GST share on house construction. I think that would be a great way to get councils to be a bit more encouraging and friendly towards growth. At the moment, they bear all the costs but don't really see much of a revenue flow that would help them, you know, be a bit more embracing of development. So all those things are things that would be really keen to get stuck into.
And all of that is music to my ears, because that's really the stuff we've been working on for the past 12 years. And we're really glad to have you on board as another voice, as another fellow traveller on everything localism. So with that, once again, welcome to the initiative, Nick, and we look forward to your contributions.
Thank you, Oliver, and I really look forward to getting out there and doing some good work for the initiative.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Thank you.